The world of ministry to teenagers can offer a full range of emotion, interesting challenges, rewarding victories, and discouraging difficulty. It is important to remember that the work we do with students is vital. It is good to be reminded that what you do matters and is appreciated. We hope that the time you spend here will encourage you and equip you to hit the mark in life and ministry. Welcome to the SCOPOST Podcast, impacting youth ministry in Oklahoma and beyond.
Hello and welcome to the SCOPOST Podcast. This is Todd Sanders with the Baptist General Convention of Oklahoma Student Education. And I'm here in studio with
Stuart Hensley, ladies and gentlemen.
Stuart, ladies and gentlemen, welcome.
Boys and girls of all ages, yes. come everybody. Stuart's here. The fun can begin. That's kind of a weird voice there.
That was good, though.
Kind of creepy.
So, Stuart, tell our listeners who may not know you a little bit about yourself, family, where you are currently serving, and what role you serve in.
Cool, man. Hey, glad to be here. This is pretty awesome. And, well, I live currently in Muscle Shoals, Alabama, which is northwest Alabama, almost in Tennessee. I serve at Highland Park Baptist Church. My title and what I do every day, is I'm the pastor of leadership development and ministry. So that's what I do every day. I have four kids and a wife, which is really good. Her name's Tara. She's awesome. Four boys, 10, 9, 7, and 5.
Bless her heart.
Yeah. So she's pretty awesome. My kids are terrific. Been in ministry since I was about 19 years old. I've lived in, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, Texas, Louisiana, and now Alabama.
Wow. Are you going for the lower 25 or something?
I'm just, I'm like Coca-Cola. I'm the real thing, you know what I'm saying? So that's what I do. But you know, the Lord's been good. I've lived in some different contexts and different places. I've served in pretty much every size church. I was raised in a mega church. I've served in a small country church, mid-size, large, and also I've served in a mega church too. So I've kind of been in different areas and contexts, and it's been a good, very unique ride. It's been fun.
So you grew up in Florida, correct?
I did. Grew up in Florida. Yeah. Jacksonville, Florida is where I grew up at. And my wife is also from there. So we grew up in a larger church there. So
very good. Florida, cool. Florida State. I know the answer to this, but I'm asking for
I'm definitely a Florida State fan.
That's what I thought.
Go Noles. And we don't pull for the Gators.
Favorite Florida State player?
Well, it's real simple. Primetime, Deion Sanders.
Okay. I thought you were going to say that kicker.
There's not a Florida State fan on the earth that has the kicker as the favorite player. We had some issues. We had some issues. Wide left, wide right.
It never wide was, everywhere.
It was never straight.
Wide front, wide back. Just,
yeah, like, matter. Oh, here we go again. Okay, great.
Sorry to bring that up.
It's okay. I mean, it's a moving bit flash
on, moving on, moving on. So you've served in a lot of different capacities in ministry. You've done youth ministry. You've done evangelism.
Yes.
You're part of Frontliners, right?
Correct.
So just tell us a little bit about maybe some of the differences and the things you've served in. You've served in collegiate ministry, young adult ministry.
Correct.
Now leadership development ministry.
Yeah.
So what are some of the differences, or maybe like one significant difference you've learned or something you've learned from the varied ministry approach?
Well, positions you've had. I think the one thing that I would say, and this is kind of overarching in everything in anywhere I've lived, is culture. Every age, every place I've lived, you really have to have a good understanding of the culture of what's happening. You know, what's going on in a student's life may be different. What's going on in a young adult's life, kid. You know, now we're all the same. People are the same. We all have the same needs, but you really have to understand culture. Especially if you start moving different states and different parts of town, different, churches, the culture is a thing that's really the thing you got to figure out. And that's sometimes can be hard.
Yeah. So that ranges or culture. I'm just saying words here, hoping something makes sense. I guess I'm just throwing out random words.
Yes.
So I apologize.
It's too late to apologize.
What I'm wondering is, looking at this idea, that makes me think that when we talk about preaching, we talk about teaching, we're talking about ministry, we're talking about exegeting the passage, exegeting your audience, and then also exegeting the culture, the context. Mm-hmm. So we usually do practical like at the end, but pausing on this for just a minute, what are two or three things you would say that you've learned or maybe that you practice in order to read your context or culture, whether it's the church, the specific church you're in, or the community that you're in, the people you work with?
Well, one thing that I've learned from doing the hard way and also the the wrong way and the right way is
some people gotta learn the hard way. I guess I'm the kind of guy who has to find out for myself.
I had that tape, by the way. I played it till it ran out. It was awesome.
As you should have.
Free at last.
Free at last. Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last.
Toby's back. Sorry. I would say this. The main thing is when I move, you know, go to a new church, new city, new town, whatever, the greatest thing to do is be very patient. Be very patient with the people. Just because something's worked in one context will not automatically work in the next context.
Good word.
Don't just, you know, do something and that's all that we're going to say. Now, there's some key, you know, values. Obviously, there's some key things you can always do, but don't just repeat something because it worked over here. You really got to figure out what's going on there. So be patient. Ask a lot of questions. I always ask a lot of questions, and I would say this: go slow. Even at times you think you're going slow, go slower. You need to really be patient. Just do good homework. You know, do your homework of what's happening with the people there, because every place is gonna be different. And the times I've rushed, the times that I've been in a hurry, I've kind of walked in some trouble. But you know, just because you've been successful over here doing this way, it doesn't mean you can be successful over here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you really have to think about who you're ministering to and what's going on. That's why it's so important to have a team of people around you, and we can get that down the road. But I mean, if you're in this by yourself, you're not going to win. You got to have a team.
Yeah, there's some very general, although very practical things there, without getting into the specifics of each context, because like you said, those things change context to context, place to place. But what you said was you take time, be patient, get a team of people. There's some great things that we can hold on to that maybe practice.
Yeah.
And even where you are, I think guys that have even been in a place 5 to 10 years, you know, a year to 2 years, whatever it is, it's never too late to go back and kind of reverse your tracks and start maybe learning or relearning your context.
Yeah.
And say, is this the same place it was 10 years ago?
You have to.
And so that's constantly changing and moving different faces and different groups. So that's a good reminder. So that's a little side note there.
Yeah, it is. I mean, that's when you're a leader, great leaders are great thinkers. And if you're not ever thinking about those things, then you're not leading.
Hmm.
You have to be a great thinker. And it kind of goes back to the discipline of being quiet and being alone and thinking. You know, you got to think. The Bible talks about being silent and listening and thinking through about what you're doing. You know, we don't want to just copy somebody else. We want to create something, because leaders create. You know, we don't have to be copying what everybody else is doing. And let's create something that's for that time, this moment right here where you're serving.
Right.
And you got to be able to think.
Yeah, that's good. So talking exegeting context, talking about looking and knowing the people and the situation and community you're in. So we're going to take a little break here for just a second. We'll be right back, and we're going to carry on, Stuart, and talk about a little bit of leadership development.
Sounds
and how
great.
We might approach that as leaders. All right, welcome back to segment two, act two here of the podcast today with
Stuart Hensley.
Stuart is in studio. It's so good to have you here with us today, talking leadership development, leadership empowerment, disciple making. Let's go back to a comment you made just in the first act, this first segment. You talked about having a team of people around you.
Right.
So let's kind of dive in there a little bit, because I know that a lot of our listeners may come from a place where they have a number of leaders. They may be coming from a place where there's a deficit of leaders,
right. Whatever
the size of the church is. So maybe it's just that they normally have 20 and they're at 15, or maybe it's a deficit because it's just them, or just them and their wife, or one other person. So let's kind of talk about developing that team maybe some trends that you see or that you need to point out or want to point out, and maybe some practical advice on how they can begin to, no matter what situation they're in, developing that team, filling the void of leadership, or even developing a fully, you know, developed group of leaders. Maybe we're fully staffed and we have a lot of support and help, but we can still develop them and need to know what to do with them.
Sure.
So where would you start being in a church, no matter what role you're in, where would you start with leadership development?
Well, the first thing you have to do is you have to know what kind of leader you are in terms of what gifts do you possess, spiritual gift And also just a personality gift. You know, the first person you got to lead is always yourself. If you can't lead you, you can't lead anybody else. So in my case, spiritually, my spiritual gift set, I'm a prophet. Okay. So that means I'm going to be aggressive and over the top and let's go get them and let's charge the hill and be very honest. Well, I know that the people I got to put around me have to offset that gift. Okay. So the first thing is you got to really know who you are. Most guys do not, and women, they do not know who they are. They want to be something sometimes that they're not really made to be. You know, it takes everybody. There's no superstar on the team, because if you know who you are, then you know who to put around you and how to develop them.
Right.
And I think a lot of times people don't do that. They just go and just get people and they try to do stuff. It's like, wait a minute, you know, you got to know who you are. Once you know who you are and once you have an idea of what you're good at, and you can look and recruit people to come help you along that way. If you're the guy or the woman on staff somewhere and it's all volunteer based, you still can build a team of volunteers. People love to help and people love to serve. It's a matter of how you recruit them. And so I would first say, know who you are. A big help for that is there's basic things you can do. Strength Finders is a great thing. It's very simple. It tells you kind of how your strengths are as a person. I would really encourage everybody to have somebody that mentors them. Find someone that's older that can speak into their life. That's always a key thing. And I think we forget about that, you know. Mm-hmm. But know who you are. Have a really good sense of who you are spiritually, how you're spiritually gifted, and how your personality gifted. Second thing is you want to find people on that you recruit on your team that help and offset what you do. Get that team, figure out those people, who they are, and build your team that way. And the whole concept is what we see in Ephesians when the Bible's very clear. You know, Paul says his job there in Ephesians as pastors is to equip people. You want to give it away. You want to find people that are better at things that you're not good at. Now, there's two, John Maxwell talks a lot about this, about delegating and dumping. Delegating is an honor. When you delegate something to somebody, what you're saying to that person is you're a whole lot better at this than I am. Dumping is I'm just giving that to you to waste your time. When you delegate somebody on your team and they know who they are and you know who you are, it empowers them to be a better leader because now they take ownership. And then if you train them that way, then the only way they know how to build a team is how you've taught them, because everything's a teachable moment. So now you're not just delegating a responsibility, you're training somebody on how to do that to somebody else. And then the team wins. Everybody kind of fits in their spot. And then there's a win as a team. So those are a couple of things on the front end that I would do, very practical, that know who you are, build a team around you with people that fit those gifts, and you can see it multiply as time goes on. There's a lot of things, of course, in that process, but those first two would be a big step in the right direction. And I will say this, I think most people, in terms of their believers, pastors, staff, whatever, they don't understand that discipleship and leadership are woven together. Christ had the masses, the multitudes, then he had the 12, then he had his three, then he had his one, and they said, see ya. And he said, here, you 12 dudes changed the world. And as he got closer to his ascension, he pulled back from the crowds and said, I'm going to take these 12 guys, y'all go change the world. So the model's there. It's a matter of us really falling into it.
Right. That's good. So what you're saying is really, as a leader, leadership development and giving ownership starts with the man in the mirror.
Yes, because I'm start with the man in the mirror.
And are you asking him to make a change?
I'm asking him to make that change.
That's so good.
You better get it right while you got the time.
All right. You gotta make that change.
You gotta make that change.
So let's kind of camp on practical stuff about empowerment. So yeah. You talked about, you said giving it away.
Yes.
And just that idea of there comes a time, like when Jesus ascends into heaven and he drops this bomb on the church, like,
go,
hey guys,
do it. See ya.
Make disciples.
Yeah.
So we're gonna talk about making disciples here as we, you know, as in our last segment, but let's kind of talk about the practicals of empowerment. You and your role, kind of tell us about your team, okay, the team of people you work with, right, and then tell us about how you with them develop them and empower them in that ministry, and then how you do that as a church.
Sure. Well, our church, my job for the last couple of years has kind of brought that process in. So before I got there, they're great people, their church had grown, but the infrastructure was not there. They grew, but they weren't ready for it. And so that kind of caused, you know, a little problem. And so it's kind of like it was a bigger church, but still operating like a small church, if that makes any sense. And so what I do is I lead a team. There's somebody that's the kids ministry, preschool ministry, pastoral care ministry, missions, worship, students, and I'm kind of in charge of them. And so there's a couple of things that we kind of go by. That's kind of real simple with this conversation. Major four areas: recruit, train, motivate, and evaluate. Recruit, train, motivate, and evaluate. So we want to recruit the best people out there. All right. I'm all about finding diamonds in the rough. I want the people that are hungry, that are teachable, that are moldable, that, man, we recruit them and they're there because we're going to recruit the best we can find. Okay. Then training is a big thing. One thing we do as a staff, and I'll talk about this in a second, we're constantly training. All right. Constantly reading, constantly using all these resources available that we have now. So we're training. I'm pouring into them. We're talking discipleship stuff, leadership stuff. It's constant. We're constantly reading, constantly talking, constantly putting things in front of us. Third thing, motivating. Look, you got to be encouraged. You got to say good job and motivate people. There's inspiration and there's information. And sometimes we choose one or the other. You got to inspire people. There's got to be a level of passion about how much you do. So we want to motivate them. I want to motivate the staff to go pour their lives on other leaders. And last thing, we're going to evaluate. We're always going to look back and go, hey, what was good? What was bad? What can we do better? And also, we're going to ask outside influences, hey, what are we doing? What do you think? So recruiting, training, motivating, evaluating. My job with that team is to make them the best leader they can possibly be, infuse in them those concepts, and then they take that to all their people underneath. The big catchword now, of course, is the pipeline with all that stuff. And that's basically what it is. Now, this takes time. You know, recruiting, in training and motivating and evaluating. This doesn't happen in like 2 weeks. This takes time. It takes time to do the right thing. It's, the winners are the people that can do the right thing on a consistent basis. Mm-hmm. Once you train them and you give it to them, you let them pass and you let them fail. That means sometimes you got to pull back and watch them actually drop the ball. They need to learn how to drop. They need to learn in bad experiences, but also when you take a step back and they succeed, man, they win. And when they feel the win, that's when the whole team wins. So what I try to do is now, if you're on my staff or on the staff that we serve in, we're going to read a lot of books. We read a lot of different books. We're going to use Right Now Media. We're going to watch sermons. We're going to go to conferences. There's going to constantly something in front of us. We're going to learn theology. And sometimes they can get, sometimes it's a little, it can be overwhelming at times. But if we're not learning, then how can we be leading? You lose the right. And great leaders are always learning. And there's so many things to learn. So what I try to do is I try to motivate them as a team. The goals we set are team goals. And then when we win, let's celebrate the win. Okay. But the real win is after a period of time to see, have you multiplied people underneath you? Have they taken that and ran with that? Mm-hmm. And that's the ultimate goal. And I always tell people this, if you're a student pastor, the ultimate goal is to go to a disciple now and you can sit in the back corner and watch it happen. If people are coming to you and asking you about host homes, they're coming to ask you about curriculum, and you've not done your job. At camp, you should be able to walk around and high-five those kids and loving those leaders. You know, as a pastor, your job is to preach the word on Sunday morning, not worried about who's jiggling the toilet and what's happening in the parking lot. Nope, his job is to preach that word that Sunday morning. So you can tell your leadership style by how many questions are asked to you. Because there's people that will fill those lanes that are better at that. Just because you can doesn't mean you should. Right. And I think those things, and our church is in transition now. I mean, we had, you know, unfortunately, when I first got there, we had some people that didn't make it on our staff. It wasn't bad, but they realized they weren't a good fit because now we're raising the bar of what we're trying to do. And this takes time. You know, but recruiting, training, motivating, evaluating, I mean, having fun. My job is to get with them one-on-one. I get with everybody one-on-one about every 6-7 weeks. How you doing? What's going on? What resources do you need? What's happening? So we're pouring into them, modeling that, and then they go to they do that down the line.
Yeah, that's great. Let's kind of camp on two parts of that process. Okay. Because I think first, in order to start this process, even if let's go to the church, the listener out there, you might be in a context where it's you, maybe your spouse, maybe one other worker, maybe it's just you.
Yeah.
And you've got to start that process.
Right.
I think that the process starts with the evaluation.
Right.
And so you kind of got to take stock in where you are.
Right.
But let's say we've done that and we realize there's an issue. We need to develop some leaders.
Yes.
So let's look at that recruiting side, okay, and maybe two or three things that our listener could go tomorrow after listening to this episode,
yeah,
and say, here's how I can start to recruit and then start that process,
right,
of developing a leadership base.
Well, something really smart and easy you can do is, first of all, when you go recruit somebody, you got to know, really, what are they being recruited to, okay? That means this. If I'm recruiting John Smith over here to be, let's just say he's going to be a seventh grade, boys community group leader on Sunday morning. When I go meet with this individual, just what I said a minute ago, kind of first thing, you want to inspire them. You want to set the big picture of what this thing is. And they need to be motivated by the vision of it. So you need to know what this person is going to do. Then clear expectations of, this is how it works. And then lastly, this is why I need you. So when I go to somebody, what I'll do is I'll tell them, this is why I'm here. And I don't really ask them, I just tell them. Now that sounds kind of rude, okay? But when I sit down with John, I've already done my homework on John. I've asked people about him. I've watched him. I know who that is. Now, as the organization gets bigger, you train other leaders on how to recruit. So you're the only person looking for people on Sunday morning or whatever. But I sit down with John and say, John, here's the deal. I got seventh grade boys, but here's the opportunity you have. Our student ministry is about, doing these three things, whatever your vision is for your student ministry. Boom, boom, boom. And I need you to come in and be a part of something awesome. So I inspire them, and then I give them the raw information. This is what it's going to look like every week, and this is what I need from you. And I want you to be a part of my team, and it's going to change the world. When you recruit somebody like that, it's not, hey, we have nobody back here. The seventh grade guys are terrible. Oh, yeah. They're horrible, but I guess you can do it. Well, who wants to do that?
No one.
Nobody. But you have to do a good job, too, of looking beyond the four or five people you always ask. Ignore those people. They're doing everything. And that's the thing recruiting. You got to find the diamond in the rough. You got to find the person they're going, wait a minute, look at that. I mean, wow, there's opportunity there. But once again, you're a leader, you're doing all the details, and you're doing everything, you have no time to think. And the problem most people in ministry is we fight that. We're doing everything because we feel like if we're not touching it, it's not going to get done the right way. That's not true.
Yeah.
You limit yourself when you're doing too much. So recruiting, that's the basic things. Now, there's tons of resources out there. There's books, and this goes back to that mentor. If I don't care how small of a church I was in, I'd be calling somebody, can I come meet with you for an hour? I'm finding somebody to talk to give me some parameters, give me some pointers. You can't figure it out on your own. We all need help. I get coaching. I get coaching all the time. And you never stop learning. So that's some basic things.
No, that's a good word. A couple of things to touch on there. One, I think you've said something good for maybe someone that's in a church that doesn't have a lot of financial resource to do, like right now, media, or, to spend a lot on books or whatever. First of all, to find a mentor and to find people that might loan you those resources. There's a lot of different ways to get in touch with that content. And so, or just someone to speak into your life that's been further down the road than you have.
And I would say this too, just be simple. Start. It's like working out. If you've never worked out, walk around the block five times, that's better than nothing. Get on the journey and just start. Start something. You don't have to have some big program and 15 pages of what. Just start. Get two or three guys and go, hey, next week, we're going to start next week at, whatever restaurant we're going to meet for 45 minutes. And then we're going to just talk about what it means to be a leader. I mean, it's not hard. Start simple.
Here's another, maybe you could speak to a leader that's in a context where there is no other adult available. Maybe a small church context, just the context dictates that there aren't any people.
Correct.
What are some creative ways they could build leadership team there?
You know what? I think I'm going to go back to what my junior varsity coach told me one time. The bus didn't come pick us up. So we had 12, 13 guys. We're going to a game across town. He had a van. He goes, he told us, gentlemen, I'm going to take the starting six, and I want to go with the ones we have. In essence, these six guys are going to run the court until everybody shows up. Sometimes you got to go with what you have. And I've done this before at one church that my staff became my upperclassmen, my juniors and seniors. I mean, hey, come on. You come on with it, and we're going to roll. What, you're telling me 11, 12? Sure I am. yep, that's what we're going to do. And I have my four or five junior and seniors, and I design student ministry eventually, even in a larger context, that when you become 11, 12th grader, you're going to lead. You're leading small groups. You're doing audio. In fact, if you're a senior or junior and you're not pouring back down, then you're not going to be here. And that's the only way it keeps them anyway. But I mean, you go with the ones you have, and you'll be amazed. Great people always rise to the level of opportunity. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if you find that person who has the heart, they're going to rise to that level of opportunity.
Yeah, yeah, that's good.
And I would look, if it's two kids, one kid, whatever, you know, find who that is and you pour into them and, man, you just roll. And, you know, I always say this too, we attract who we are. You'll attract people because what will happen is when people see people getting developed, they'll want to go be part of that. I live in Alabama and I'm not an Alabama fan, but there's a reason Nick Saban wins. Not because he cheats, because his process. And coaches know if they go work for him and hang in there, they're going to get a good job. He never has a problem with talent, okay, because of that whole process. The same thing if you have 30 kids in a student ministry, you got $200 a year in a youth budget, you're working three jobs, and you have, you know, you take two kids, take one kid, and build it. You know, and find that.
That's good.
Find that.
Let me press a little bit further there. Okay. In a context where maybe pastoral leadership, and this isn't every pastor. I think there are some pastors who think like this. Could be a church member. Could be just the general feel of the community that if you're developing, then you're not doing your job.
Right.
And I know that thought process exists out there. What word of encouragement do you have for guys or ladies that might be in that scenario?
Well, I mean, you got to stick to what the word says. And you got to stick to the goods. You know, we're called to multiply. We're called to make disciples, and we're called to pour into other people. And I think what I would tell people in that context, especially the younger people, when you're younger, you're more opinionated. You're more like, oh, I'm getting raw the deal. Silence is golden. You just do what the Lord's asked you to do. You know, whenever I've felt jaded in ministry or I feel like I've been cheated, the only thing that keeps me focused and keeps me on the right path and helps my attitude is when I'm investing in people, because that's what Jesus did. And when you're discipling people, you're pouring into people. Look, caution flag here. People will disappoint you. Now, here's the deal. When you're developing leaders, there's casualties. There's casualties in war. You know, not everybody you pour into is going to be great. I talked to a phone yesterday to a former student who went to one of our Baptist seminaries who's walked away from the faith. He's a full-blown atheist. He has went to one of our seminaries, was called ministry, was like one of my top five kids. I mean, it's breaking my heart. He calls me every month. Still have a great relationship with me. He tells me thanks for investing in my life. I could feel a sense of I failed, but I didn't fail. Because ultimately, I don't pour into people for me. I pour it for the kingdom. And I do it because that's what Christ asks us to do. So keep quiet. Do the things you know to do. It keeps you focused and continue to do those things. You'll never regret pouring into people. You'll always regret talking about people and talking about things and also jazz. Mm, but you'll never regret spending time investing in people.
That's great. That's great. So I think there's an encouragement there too to our listeners if you find yourself in that situation where the attitude is kind of, well, we expect you to do all this stuff and do everything. And the church might put that on the pastor as well. I would say, okay, well then for a time, do that.
Yeah.
Do everything, but at the same time, be developing other people. And then at some point, there'll be an opportunity for you to exercise that and shine because you've empowered people.
Well, I served in a larger context. Larger churches, which most guys is funny. You work at a big mega church, there's pressure numerically. Well, I know to do the things that I really wanted to do, I had to honor my authority. So I did some things that was important maybe to my pastor that was not important to me, but I knew if I honored him, once I got that done, I could do what I wanted to do in terms of what I felt really called to do.
Right.
So I was honoring the authority of my life, but also because it gave me freedom. Right. You know, the people, when you're serving with somebody, they want loyalty and trust. Those things are built over time. Now, they're asking you to do something that's unbiblical or moral. Obviously, but we're talking about preference.
Here. Different episode.
Yeah, that's a whole different thing. But I learned to do that. And then all of a sudden, it wasn't a big deal. You could do your own thing that you felt that you wanted to do, you know. Yeah. But it's hard, and ministry's hard. Let's just get down to it. This is no joke. I mean, this is hard. because it's personal.
Yeah.
This is personal, you know?
Yeah, and it should be. I mean, we're putting in the work. It should be a little difficult. But so what I hear you saying is when you're developing a team, be a leadership stalker.
Yes. That's what I'm saying.
I always feel like Stuart's watching me.
Yes. Yes. That's
and he may be playing tricks on me.
My mom's playing tricks on me. But no, I think the important thing, it's all about attitude. Okay. You got to be you, like I said in the beginning. But you must have an attitude of, I'm leading this, but you're a servant leader. The perfect example is Christ. He's a servant leader. You wash the feet, you serve, but it's an attitude of, we're multiplying. We're growing somewhere. You're putting the vision in front, but you're doing it the right way. Right. Not over hype, but you do it the right way.
Right. Very good. So we're going to take a little short break here, move on into Act 3, and we're going to wrap up today talking about multiplication, talking about the ultimate goal, like you mentioned just earlier. So hang tight. We'll be right back with Act 3. And welcome back to Act 3 of the Scope Post podcast. We're in studio today with
Stuart Hensley.
Stuart and I are talking all kinds of things, leadership development, empowerment. We're talking about this segment. We're going to talk about multiplication. So when we look at that development side of your process, and you kind of share that with us, that theory from your context currently, your church, and looking at that motivational and empowerment side, because that's where we're really releasing people to do the work of ministry. Let's kind of camp there and just kind of look at some practical things that leaders can do to say, when you've recruited them, you're developing and equipping, educating them, how do you then begin to give them, like you said a while ago, you're giving them the ability to pass or fail, you know, that kind of thing, to succeed or to experience setback, whatever it is, but you're walking through this process of leadership. How do you hand that over practically?
Well, I think you always have to be very clear, and you need to show them first. You know, well, first of all, they need to watch you do it, and then you show them how to do it. You watch them doing it, and then you walk away from it. That's the whole old school process, but really is. So let me give an example. If I'm going to speak at a Disciple Now, I'm going to usually take somebody with me. That's one of our interns, for example, or some of our students, because I want them to see how that works. So if they see it and then we talk about it, you know, it's not just, hey, throw you in there and figure it out. You know, so there needs to be some good training, but then there needs to be a point where you say, all right, here, jump in there. And I'll give you an example. My last church I was at, we had all these interns and a couple of these guys, they never publicly spoke before. So I got them a kid's Bible, and every intern had to read the whole kid's Bible. Then at these meetings, these weekly meetings we had, the two or three guys I'd never preached before, they had to get up and preach to the staff a 15-minute deal on these kids' stories in the Bible. A, they learn how to read the Bible, because kids' Bibles is the easiest way to read a Bible. B, they never have spoken before, so we had people evaluating them when they were speaking. And C, it was a very tough crowd. It was all the people they knew. Well, so I was taking them with me. They were seeing how to do it. We're educating them on how to take a passage and break it down, and then they were doing it. So you got to find unique ways. Everything's a teachable moment. So every meeting you have, every opportunity you have, you're showing somebody how to do it. So it's really not that big of a deal. So they don't feel like they go from 0 to 100. You know, right now at my church, there's two ladies that are doing VBS, and it's the first time they've ever led VBS by themselves. So I've met with them continually, by chunks, creating some timelines. All right, what's yet going on? They're nervous. They're uptight. Well, I'm not going to be there the week of VBS. I'm still have a speaking engagement, and they know that. So the pressure is on, but that's okay, because we have a team of people that we're helping them with the win. Now, once they do it this first year, there can be a lot of things they could have done better, but that's okay. They did it. So as this gets closer to this VBS, for example, we're going down things, we're viewing things, and also helping them along the way to empower them to go, hey, you can do this. So going into it, you want to find small wins. It's like playing baseball. You want to get a base hit. Let's get a base hit first. Let's get a base hit first. Home runs will come. Let's get a nice little base hit and just get on base. So you got to find unique ways for people that you're working with to get a win. That win may be, hey, we're doing a student ministry, all right, you know, middle school guy or intern guy or high school guy, you plan a bowling night. You know, all the details, it's all on you. He plans it. He does a great job, base hit. And now he's getting confidence on the next time I can do this over here. Preaching. You let a guy preach. Well, don't make him get up there for the first time and preach for 45 minutes. He's going to go about 10. Well, let him do half the sermon. You do the other half. You know, find little ways to get him winning.
Right.
And I think, and they'll feed off that, you know. So I think it'll help out a lot.
Setting them up for success.
Correct.
I think that's great. So let's kind of shift gears from leadership development, plugging people into ministry, developing that team. And let's just talk about disciple making, making disciple makers.
Right.
One is, how does that happen in your church, in your context?
Well, in our context, we have D groups. Of course, Robert Gowdy has kind of that whole deal he's doing. He's at Long Hollow in Nashville. It's unbelievable, the whole process there. But all it is a D group. What we do at our church is there's community groups we want everybody to be in. That's a Sunday morning deal. And then from there comes our D groups. That's the, you know, 3 to 5 people. That's more of accountability. And it's just straight up in the Bible. This is what you're doing. And the whole goal there is they're there maybe 6 months to a year, and then they go start a group. So it's, you're not just going to be in a group to hang out and party like a rock star for 5 or 6 years. The goal is we're sending you out. So you're going to come learn how to do it. And then time's come to you to go get somebody else. So it's a constant attitude multiplication. Plus, that falls into some of our leadership opportunities. The expectations are very clear when you come and you start leading the park a lot. And of course, those are the people we're looking at. Is there a teacher in there? Is there somebody can do something else? And so it's a nice little kind of flow of what's happening based on their spiritual gift, based on who they are. And that's how we do it. So we from community group to D group to serving, and then the person that wants to go the next step. You might have a person that wants to be a parking lot for the rest of their life, and that's great. But there's other people that can be pushed that can go to other levels, become leaders of leaders. So that's kind of how we do it.
Gotcha. Yeah. So I think that process, what you talked about with leadership development and plugging people into ministry, really is the same process and should be the foundational process really for us in the church.
Correct.
Is to develop those who will make disciples. And so what they may be serving over here, but we expect everybody and put the expectation out there, raise the bar, so to speak, and communicate clearly those things up front that when you become a disciple, then the goal is that you would disciple others.
Yes.
And so to set an expectation that after a certain period of time, this is what is expected of me.
Well, I think, you know, the greatest victory I've had, victory sounds kind of cheesy. The greatest satisfaction I've had is when I've left ministries or left a church and they're doing better than when I was there. Or when a staff member leaves or their job changes and you give the guy under him the same job. What kills churches is everything's based on personalities. It's based on a person. We want it based on a biblical process. So no matter who comes in or out, the people know the standard. And I've seen it work. It does work, but you got to take the you out of it. I mean, the one question we always ask ourselves as pastors, as leaders, is what is best for the church? Not best for you personally, because sometimes best for you personally means doing something you don't want to do or going somewhere you don't go or, you know, taking on another role.
Right.
What's best for the church?
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think that's a good perspective. I always have said and tell people, and I really try to live this out as my goal, I guess, in success in ministry would be that I not be at a church forever, but it would be that that I would develop people to the point where I didn't need a job.
Yeah.
And so that's the best marker sometimes of what is going on. And not that you get fired and you say, well, I must have done a good job. They didn't need me.
Well, sometimes sometimes your season's over.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some people stay in the same church forever and some people move around. You know, it's not right or wrong, but you want it to be that way.
Develop people, empower people to the point where you go do something else. Like you were saying earlier,
right.
I model it for you, then you do it, I watch.
Right.
And then you do it, and I go do something else.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing.
And that's that's the end of the game.
Right.
You know, it sounds kind of cutthroat, but it's really not. Yeah. You know, it's not based on a person. Everybody's it's like, of course, the most insecure people I know are pastors, especially young ones. You know, the youth guy shows up, and he's got to prove that he's worth something, so he went to all these events. No, 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 no. Calm down. Invest in a team of people.
Right.
you know, just relax.
Yeah. Yeah. So, listen, as we begin to wrap up here with this, episode of our podcast, here's some takeaways. I think first of all, is to evaluate kind of where you are, just take stock in how we're doing at empowerment, team building, developing people and releasing people to ministry, but also look on this discipleship side, like who are we as a church and how are we doing at making disciple makers, in a spiritual maturity process. To have the process, I think those are something important you said.
Yep.
And then to do the work of the process.
Yes.
And it can be hard work. It's not clean. It can be messy, and you have to stay on top of it. It doesn't work itself, nor should it. And so it takes us leading through that. And then I would also say to let the, I like what you said about the biblical process driving you, mm-hmm. And not a personality. You know, I always talk to churches, and I'll tell them, in an interim process or a transitional process, you need to determine who you are as a congregation,
yes.
and not let the leader determine who you are.
Correct.
So get a leader that will walk with you, who you are,
right.
beside you in that ministry. And so I think that that's part of that. As we develop people, then the people are becoming the church
right.
and doing the work of the church. And I think that that's important. So lots of good stuff here today,
yeah,
Stuart.
Man.
Thanks for your time. I know you got a lot going on here. We appreciate you being with us. Thank you for speaking out of your experience.
Oh yeah.
And all the learning that has come from that over the years, and we'll look forward to the next time.
All right, buddy. Sounds good. So thanks for being here. It was a lot of fun.
God bless. And again, thank you for listening to the Scope Post podcast. This is Todd Sanders, and we ask that you would just tune in. Check us out on scopepost.org, and we also have a great disciple-making resource that I want to point you to called Disciple Me. You can find that at scopepost.org/discipleme. 12-week process to build students toward being disciple-makers. So check that out, and if you need anything, holler at us. And we love helping you hit the mark in life and ministry. God bless.
Next time on Scopus.
And so that mindset focused on developing disciples for the ministry of the word through prayer, through relational engagement, and sometimes I use it now.
Scopus and the Scopus podcast are ministries of the BGCO and made available through the generous gifts of Oklahoma Baptist to the cooperative program. Find out more about Oklahoma Youth Ministry at scopepost.org.
Delilah, love someone tonight.
Sorry.
Time after time.
If you're lost, you can whip my head.
Time after time.
I'll be waiting. I've been waiting for a girl like you to come into my life.
That was the 80s, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was
the 80s. That was a whole song. That was-